can each party spell out what our positions are? You'll recall that the debate was around the 5.5% tax increase. Is substantially lower on tobacco than the inflation rate, and so on and so on. And stakeholders with the National Council Against Smoking, Cancer, Department of Health, SAMRC, and NCAs. And we discussed that. Is there any further point people want to make on the matter of the increased customs and taxes on tobacco? Members? Well, as far as I know, the ANC is fine with what we have in the bill. Anybody else want to say anything on that? Nope. All right. Then the next one is the health promotion levy. We've been through this. The issue here is the negotiated trade-offs that Treasury and all of the stakeholders go through. There is a general commitment to ensuring that we find the right balances. And I think most in the committee agreed that this should be delayed. Peter, you've got your hand up. It's now the policy-making process of the committee, but fine, you can speak.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to let you know that in accordance with your instructions, I had a meeting with Mpho and discussions and exchanged some communications with him on the position. And I think that yes, SARS and Treasury now has that under their hat and they understand the process. Just wanted to confirm that we've done what you asked us to do. Thanks, Mr. Chair.
Okay. No, you see, remember what we encouraged there was in preparation for the next round. In other words, I think you understand how hard it is. And we got legal advice on this in 2014. I think I would have conveyed to the meeting previously. So we are glad the meeting took place. I think in our report, we should note that. We would have in any case come back to that next year and said, well, did you meet, right? And if not, why not go back and meet, right? We have done that. And I must say, mostly Treasury does, actually, with all the challenges, they do meet. And sometimes we put a precondition, Peter. We say, nope, we're not going ahead with this bill or this clause until you have that meeting and report back to us. Now, there, every department scurries to have that meeting because they want the bill process. Okay, thank you, Peter, for that. You're welcome to come in when you want, but essentially, we're reaching a stage where it's policy making by the elected public representatives. But if you've got a new point you want to make, as with other stakeholders in other situations, we allow it. And as I've said before, you might not know this, Peter, but once, even on the day we're voting on a bill, I think it was, I can't recall who, but I think it was the Chartered Accountants or was it PwC or somebody came and they pointed out a problem in the bill. It was a technical error and we all accepted it. It was picked up by my colleague, Tandi Tobias, once they said it. I couldn't see it. And yes, we made the change there and then, and the department agreed. Well, they knew that they botched up and we had as a committee. So, okay, if you find something new, feel free. Okay, who's the next issue then? See, the health promotion levy, I think the balances that the committee struck in 2017 are correct, really. It's how you tinker with the rates. And that's not something we can decide here. It's not our job also. It's for the stakeholders in Treasury to come with a bill. And once it's here, it's our job to listen to the experts in that area and see what merit we can find in it. But the object of engaging around the rates and monetary bill is mainly to prepare some consensus between stakeholders on any issue and National Treasury. And our job is to ask them, if we ask them to do so, have you met? What came out of it? Give us a report. And we ask both sides to do it, because sometimes, obviously, each side will see things in a meeting that the other side says didn't really happen. So thanks, Peter. And on Hila, I really think that they have to accept that this process is unfolding. No one's saying no. We're trying to find the right balances. The country is slowly edging towards, as you'll see, what the president said even this week and yesterday or the day before, about being more sensitive to climate change and so on, and being more sensitive to all of these environmental health issues, obviously is a related matter. Then on e-cigarettes, I don't know if anybody's got anything new to say on e-cigarettes. Members, Alan Wickham is here. Dennis, I see your hands up. Oh, please, may I say this? Firstly, we unfortunately don't have Inkulu Leko here. He's not well. He spoke with me yesterday afternoon. And then we've got here Alan Wickham, who is the wonderful secretary also of the SCOF, Standing Committee on Finance. Some of us know him, especially Dick Lady and I, because we served with him in the last term. Welcome, Alan, and thanks for coming in. Okay, so over to you, Dennis.
Thanks very much, Chairperson, and shame. My sympathy to Alan for having to put up with us, and best wishes to Nkululeko. It was really just a comment on the health promotions levy and the impact that it's had, Jay. And again, as the NCOP, the impact of legislation specifically on provinces and individual provinces is a key part of our role. And I think we were all fairly alarmed when we were in KwaZulu-Natal and we saw the impact. So while I agree with you that the tax is in place, it's not really our space to comment too much about whether it's in place or not. But certainly the movement of the rate lies firmly with the minister. There was a deferment of the implementation of increases in the past, and I certainly think that based on what we're seeing in KwaZulu-Natal, with all of the issues that have come together to create almost a perfect storm in KwaZulu-Natal, the additional impact of the health promotions levy has had a dire impact on many of the farmers in the rural areas of KwaZulu-Natal. And whilst the health benefits are certainly something that need to be considered, as with everything in life, there's a balance that needs to be achieved. So, I really would appreciate if we could include at least in our report a fairly strong comment that we would like to see the impact of the tax and the impacts the tax has had already taken into account when any assessment is made about increasing the tax and the implementation of increased implementation date of any increases. Something fairly strong in our report would be greatly appreciated. Thank you, Chair.
I think that's fine, but let's hear from other members in response to that. What do members think about that? Well, while people are mulling over this, may I just say that, look, you're right. Our job is to focus, on national issues, obviously, giving a second glance or consideration of them. But particularly our role is, what do we do about the way a particular tax impacts on different provinces? So Esther and the team, will you put something in around this? And the familiar balances we've had on this area in the context of that. I don't think anybody, even Hila, proponents or representatives want to see job losses and destructions of the political economy and economy of provinces. But those are balances that the health and finance committees in processing the sugar beverages tax issue set for hours and hours on. But you're right. I think we should do that, and we should point to how it impacts on KZN in particular. And there has to be some consideration, maybe. Look, I don't know how you couch this, but about when the provincial equitable share is allocated. Younger, do you want to come in on this? Shouldn't there be some consideration that if we take a national policy that affects one province advantageously more than the province next door or other provinces, that should be made up in terms of the PEC, PSP, Provincial Equitable Share. Yanga, you want to come in on this?
I'm sorry, Chair. Good morning, members. I'm sorry, Chair. I cannot respond to this as this falls under Mati Cheng Maleni and under InterGov. So they are the best to respond on this issue. Thanks.
Yeah, but we're not asking you to give an official answer. We're asking you, is that not part of the criteria used in how PES is allocated? Does anybody know? Is there another example where, well, look, for example, the e-tolls affected Gauteng, right? Now, we said scrap the e-tolls. And I think we said, not we, the executive said nationally, you guys, and when I mean you guys, I mean in the multilateral sense of it, you know, he, she, they, you must find the money in the province. Now, does anybody know, is there some consideration that the national government will allocate some compensation to Gauteng to take that into account? Anybody know from Treasury? Yanga, do you have any idea what you've done before? If your tax bills, you see, you can't say to me, Mari Jing is responsible. I understand that. But when you are shaping the tax part, you're obviously taking into account how it impacts on different provinces. Then presumably your sector or your division within Treasury should go to Mari Jing and say, hey, this is the impact that happened in KZN. I'm not plugging KZN because I come from there. In fact, I've been banned, as you know. So you may know processing this bill for, you know, supporting health promotion levy at that time. So it's not about it. It's counting. I don't live there. E-tolls as well. I mean, how are they going to manage? So it's a general question to Yanga. It's not holding you to account on behalf of Treasury. Do you want to come in or one of your fellow officials? You experience in tax issues. Yanga, we're not holding you against the wall. We're just asking, do you know what happens?
I'm sorry, Chair. From my part, I cannot simply answer this question. Hence, I'm saying that it falls under that purview because our process, the purpose of the tax bills, as indicated also in the Constitution as well in the legislation, is to impose taxes for the National Revenue Fund, and these taxes are national taxes. Hence, I'm saying that in terms of allocation, Mati Cheng would be best. Maybe we can pose that question to her and then come back to you maybe in the following year so that we can have a full spectrum of it. Thank you, Chair.
All right, can we do that? Can we put that down in our recommendations, Esther and the team, right? Okay, fine. The next issue, then we're done with the rates and monetary bill, right? Then we go to the outstanding issues on TLAP. Again, now this is about e-cigarettes, right? And all of these issues, if you see on page 4, are the same issues as they appear in TLAP. Now, they were the two or three key issues that pervaded the public hearings. And there were a cluster of people, although we had many submissions, 13 in all, actually, there were basically around two or three major themes. Tobacco, e-cigarettes, and the health levy. So I don't think we need to go through it clause by clause in terms of policy. The policy applies, and if we're at ease with that, we can begin with the clause by clause treatment of each bill. And Yanga, you have to come in here. Now, before I move on, is there any member who wants to say anything? I have to take an urgent call related to what we're discussing now. from a member who can't be here. So it's related to this. So I will just switch off and give you some time to consider whether there's something else you want to say. Yes, it's related to this matter. There's been some confusion. We have got an extension till the 13th of December to finalize the General Laws Amendment Bill, but that extension does not apply to the tax bill. So we are voting on the tax bills in the House on Tuesday the 6th. This means that we will have to vote on the report by Friday. But I got a feeling, the way we are going, that we will, in fact, probably finish the processing of the clause by clause today, because the policy issues seem to be more or less sorted now. And we can then distribute the report this afternoon and vote on it tomorrow. We meant to give them a reply as to whether we need an extension. I don't think we need an extension given where things are, and right, the next point then is, does the DA or EFF have anything to say? Nope. Okay, just one second. There's some confusion about process. I have to attend to this. I'm really sorry. Okay, comrades, colleagues, can we now go to the first bill? Now, we have a problem. Some people are finding, I don't know what's happening with ESCOM. Now, Dennis, are you back?
Jay, yeah, I'm having a problem with the sound on my device. I've just grabbed a spare set of speakers and busy plugging them in.
So you're all right. Okay, now we've got an apology from Mama Rakhane, and Comrade Njadu is also having connectivity problems, and Dikeledi is joining us now. So, you know, I don't know, in different parts, and some people are flying in physically for tomorrow's meeting, so we have that issue, but we have to go ahead. So we're going to turn to the first bill. Now, is there any other policy issue you want to raise, Dennis? Dennis, have you lost again?
Yeah, sorry, Jay. So I do think, yeah, and Parliament's...
We agreed with your point about the sugar beverages tax, right? HBR. Yeah. We're putting that in.
Thank you. That's appreciated. The other issue that I just wanted a little bit of future discussion on is the difference between vaping and smoking. Now, I don't think that we have enough information as the Finance Committee. So historically, the health impact of smoking has meant that the sin tax has been introduced in order to ensure that the additional burden on the state as a result of people smoking cigarettes is compensated for by those people. You know, they have choice to do that, and but then they must pay in order to bolster the health system to deal with the consequential health issues. The fact that we're treating vaping in exactly the same way is interesting, because once again, you know, the science is still catching up with us. I do think that we need more information as a committee, certainly going forward. I think mostly we're reasonably comfortable with the way it's being dealt with so far, though there is quite a big change happening now. But I do think as a committee, we do need more inputs into this, and certainly we should be calling on the health department to give us a little bit more guidance on that. They, after all, would be the specialists on this, and would be indicating what the expected impact of vaping is on the health system going forward and the financial burden. So perhaps not an issue for us to debate at length now, but certainly something that we do feel that more experts need to come in to advise the committee for future considerations in this regard. Thank you, Chair.
Okay, I think we agree with that. Esther, can you put that in the report, please? Thanks. Okay, so can we move on? Is there anybody else who wants to say anything? Mr. Jitoy?
Thank you, Chair. Jay, I concur with Honorable Ryder, but one thing that we must keep in mind is it doesn't matter how much this sin tax is being pushed up, it's not ring-fenced. So at the end of the day, the money that's gained by imposing sin taxes, to call it that, doesn't go towards the health sector. And that's just something that must be kept in mind. And I know we've heard numerous discussions and inputs with regards to what percentage must be added on this sin tax. But at the end of the day, the more expensive these products become, the more lucrative the illegal market is. And maybe if we can also add in the report that if we do not have consequences for this industry to be regulated and visited by the relevant officials, this will definitely not have the required results.
Yeah, I don't think there's any issue with that. Anybody got any objections? Nope. Okay, so we'll put that in the report, Esther. Let me just check if Esther is here. She's here. Okay, fine. We agree with that. So we'll do that next round. If that's fine now, Molitsani, do you have anything to say? The ANC study group met yesterday, and we've taken a position that we find what's here. But it's not inconsistent with what you've raised. The only thing to say is, Yanga, can you come in here? We have, you know, colleagues, we shouldn't, like, with due respect, unless we have an alternative position, keep raising the same issues, right? So, for example, we have for many years explained, I don't agree with it personally, but Treasury has got an overall position. So we need to tackle that overall position. Their position is that for a variety of reasons, and I think let's put it down in a report now, Yanga, can you give us a paragraph on why you do not ring-fence revenue raised? Why do you not ring-fence it? You've explained to us, when we had the health promotion levy bill first introduced to Parliament, we, as I said, had the health committee there. It was processed jointly from the beginning by ourselves and the health committee on the NA side. And we both felt strongly that the money, the revenue that's secured, should be given for improving the hospitals and clinics and the whole health sector. They said they do not. They've tried that before, and there were huge complications. And so what we call ring fencing, I can't think of another word, younger may have the technical term, is not something they will do for the reasons they have. And I think younger just come in, and for the report, can you write a paragraph to explain why? What we can say as a committee, we believe that it should be ring fenced, but we understand National Treasury's point of view. But remember, Fani, if they ring fence the health promotion levy, they're going to say, okay, if you take the fuel levy, then we ring fence it and it has to be used for climate change challenges. And we raise money in this other sector, we have to use it for ring fencing for that. And then it upsets their balances. That's something to that effect. But Yanga, over to you. You can respond now to anything that, you know, people have said this morning in terms of policy issues. But don't repeat what you've already said. Anything new you want to say. Yanga, over to you.
Thank you, Chair. With regard to ring fencing, as you clearly indicated, we have had our arguments when we're doing the health promotion levy, as well as the carbon tax. And the example that we provided to Parliament was the ring fencing of the UIF, whereby the UIF money is ring fenced and that money cannot be used for anything else except for that purpose. So that has been the good example of ring fencing we have as government. But we will provide a further paragraph regarding the reasons why we did not ring fence. But as you have indicated, when you were the chair of the Standing Committee on Finance doing HPL and carbon tax, we have said that. On other issues regarding tobacco and carbon tax, I'll ask Chris Mpo and Kuhle to come in. Thank you, Chair.
Thanks, Yanga. Thanks, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members. I think the issue for us has always been that the ring fencing, especially using legislation to say that the revenue raised will all go into, for example, the health sector, can become problematic in terms of budgeting. Because again, if that money is ring fenced and there are no programs on the health sector, it means therefore that the money will be ring fenced and cannot be used for any other thing. And so what we have indicated before is that we're not opposed to what we refer to as soft earmarking, in the sense that when the Department of Health, for example, request additional money for health promotion, we can be able to also motivate in the public finance unit to say that they can make money available, additional money available for the programs that they want to do, without necessarily putting in legislation that says all the money raised from the health promotion levy has to go to the Department of Health. It will be based on the budgetary needs and the programs that need to be implemented, and we can always motivate for the Department of Health to get additional money without necessarily putting those in legislation to say all the money must go to the Department of Health. I hope that helps, Chair, but we'll provide a paragraph on that.
That's fine. Then is there, who else is coming in? Is it Yanga, you said somebody else is coming in?
I think, Chair, there are no questions that we need to respond to now on carbon tax. So Kuhle was going to come on carbon tax.
Okay, so basically, I don't see anything else coming up. Is there anything else? No. All right. In that case, can we go to the first poll? Rates and tax poll. Now, Yanga, can you take us through it clause by clause?
Okay, Chair.
Can you open it? Oh, it's open on the screen. And let me open. I prefer to look at it on my screen. Okay, here, yeah, I've got it. Right. Okay. So, colleagues, we're on the... Right. So we're on page 2 of the bill.
Yeah. Yes, Chair. Clause 1 of the bill refers to the fixing of rates of normal tax to take into account the inflationary increase. Clause 2, must I go and check?
Oh, sorry, hang on, I was muted by myself. Colleagues, can I take it that instead of looking for your hands all the time, you will interrupt and say, Chair, I want to raise this issue or whatever, right? But normally what happens is when it comes to tax bills, because they're so technical and difficult to process, once we agree on the policy issue, we usually... agree on the policy issue, but the way they worded it may be a problem. Please come back and interrupt me and say, Chairperson or Eunice or whatever, and you will be allowed to speak instead of putting your hand up all the time, because then it makes the process faster if we avoid hand raising and putting in from anybody. So we can take it, you can move on. Thank you.
Clause 2, Chair, refers to rebates, the increase in primary rebate, secondary rebate, and tertiary rebate.
Yeah, no, on that, I don't think there's any issue. We've agreed on that, right? Fine.
Clause 3 refers to medical tax credits, the increase to medical tax credits applicable to individuals.
Fine, there's nobody interrupting. So carry on. If somebody interrupts, okay, you can stop. Or if I say
clause 4 refers to the exemption in respect of the formula used to apply for the fringe benefit applicable to employer-provided housing. So the fringe benefit is increased yearly to equal to the tax-free threshold.
Okay. Can I pause here? I wanted to ask Dennis. Dennis? So on clause 4, you can see it's an amendment of Schedule 1, colleagues, on page 4. It says there below clause 4, sub 1 and sub 2. It's amendment of Schedule 1 to Act 91 of 64, as amended by Section 19 of Act 95 of 1965. And it goes on and on and on. Would you, or Willie, like to explain to the committee, starting with the amendment of Schedule 1 to Act 91 of 1964, ending with Section 5 of Act 19 of 2021, what are these?
Certainly, Chair. Can you authorize us an additional extension of 2 hours for the meeting? I'll happily take us through it.
Now, I say this because I was furious. In my life, I've never, long life, we had never had to deal with bills like this. So in anger one day, not even fury actually, I said to Momani, hey, we have to go through all of those things. Give us 5 years. How are you meant to know that you've got all these amendments and the correct cross-referencing and so on? Then we got one of our people to do some research on how it's done in the UK Parliament. We just chose the UK because that's our former colonial power and has shaped to some extent in both good and bad ways what we do in our Parliament. So they came back and said, nah, it's the same. They looked at the US as well. Now the most, like, let's say, established parliaments to see, hey, they've got 1,000 times more resources than we do. And the comeback was that now, you know, it's the committee staff on the parliamentary side and the advisors. And in fact, National Treasury will tell you that often it's their tax experts and legal experts on tax that advise them on these things. And even the official obviously wouldn't be able to. It's unfair how you expect Younger, in fact, as good as she is, to know all of that. So anyway, that was half serious and half facetious. Okay, can you go on?
Yeah, I'll be able to tell you. I'll be able to tell you which prime minister signed each of them if I look at the dates, but that is as far as I can go.
Okay, exactly. Do without that. Five. Clause five, my friend Yanga.
Clause five deals with the amendments to the Customs and Excise Act, which is Act number of 91 of 1964. So when we make those amendments to the increasing excise duty on alcohol and tobacco, fuel levy, health promotion levy, they are all in clause five.
Right. Clause six?
Clause six deals with amendments to the employment tax incentives.
Yeah, but that's clear enough. Clause seven?
Clause seven deals with the increasing the carbon tax rate for 1 January 2022, because in the TLAB, we are dealing with the increases from 2023 to 2030.
Yeah, nobody's coming in. You can continue. Don't have me interrupt all the time, yeah?
And clause six deals with also the formula in the carbon tax.
Mm-hmm.
And clause nine and 10, you remember in the budget, the minister announced reduction in the corporate tax rate. Yeah, so this is the effective date for that.
Yeah, obviously. Okay. That's
and then clause 11 is short.
Yeah, obviously. Yeah, that's fine.
Yeah.
Okay. That's so on this bill, we give people another day to just look at it if they want and then come back. So what we will do is we are having a CECOF meeting tomorrow. And what we will do before that meeting starts is to quickly, or after that meeting ends, is to quickly table the report. The report will go out this afternoon by 5 o'clock at the latest, right? Probably earlier, because the team has started drafting aspects of it. And I will probably be able to process it fairly quickly because we have no plenary this afternoon. So let's say you'll get it by 3 o'clock. So tomorrow we will vote on the bills and vote on the report. Thank you very much. But informally, we have adopted this report. Okay, so the next bill is TLAB. Let me open the TLAB. Here we are. Taxation Laws Amendment Bill. Okay, the same process applies here, my friend.
Yeah. But the biggest amendments in the definitions in clause one, it will be paragraph C, whereby we deal with the clarifying paragraph EA of the definition of gross income regarding public sector funds. So the biggest amendments in clause one regarding the definition is where we make amendments regarding to the definition regarding to the pensions. This is not, these definitions or these changes do not relate to the two parts. These were the changes that were mentioned in the budget and also referred to the taxation laws amendment bill. They are not, they don't have any bearing to the two-part system. Can you go to clause two?
Yep.
Clause two refers to the changes regarding the reviewing the timing of the accrual and incurral of variable remuneration. You remember during briefings, as Alicia went at length in describing this. Clause three is clarifying the provisions. Provision respect of royalties derived by CFCs. And clause one deals clarifying the treatment of amounts from hybrid equity instrument deemed to be income under CFC rules. So these are all the changes that are made to section 90 dealing with taxation of controlled foreign companies.
Carry on.
In clause five, it's apportionment of the interest exemption upon an individual ceasing to be tax resident. So we're making amendments to section 10. in clause 6, this is a technical correction whereby we're correcting the cross-referencing. In clause 7, also it's a technical corrections to section 10C, correcting the cross-referencing. In clause 8, amendments to section 11 of the Income Tax Act, clause 81A, it's a technical correction to whereby we are changing here to a taxpayer gender neutral. And in clause 81B, we are doing amendments, tax treatment of an asset accrued as a government grant in kind. In clause 9, amendments to section 12L, these are dealing with the carbon tax whereby we are extending the sunset date for section 12L from 1 January 2023 to 1 January 2026 in line with the budget announcement. In clause 10, amendments to section 19, we are clarifying the rules that trigger recoupment under the debt forgiveness rules. In clause 11, amendment to section 23, there is just technical correction style of writing. In clause 12, amendments to section 23M, these are consequential amendments as a result of the reduction in corporate tax rate that we made last year. And then we're making amendments to section 23M regarding interaction between the application of the interest limitation rules and capital expenditure applicable to mining companies. In clause 13, to limit the impact on lay-by arrangement, this is assisting taxpayers. In clause 28, in clause 14, amendment to section 28, there is changes as a result of impact of IFRS 17 to short-term insurers. You remember, the taxpayers made a lot of submissions in this regard.
No, not really. Stop there. Can you please explain what you just said? I didn't follow.
I'm saying that in section 45 deals with intra-group transactions, whereby the tax is being deferred because South Africa does not have group taxation. So last year, we made some amendments. So this year, we are refining the reversal of the nil-based cost rules applicable to intra-group transaction. This is assisting the taxpayers.
Yeah, it's the rules-based cost. Let's explain that, please. It's too technical for me anyway.
What happens is that on intra-group transactions, there is no tax. The tax is deferred for a later stage. Yes. Because if you transfer between group of companies, because we don't have group taxation, so we've got these mini group laws. So when you transfer an asset, there should be no base cost. Because if there's a base cost in the asset, then there's going to be capital gains tax. So here, we are refining the reversal of the nil base cost rules applicable to intra-group transactions.
Well, you're clearer now, but it's a very complicated thing. Okay, carry on.
Okay, in clause 17, these are consequential amendments made to last year. In situation where the dividends tax is not applicable by the reason of the application of the tax treaty.
Okay.
And also, clause 18, similar, same as sections as the above mentioned clause, this is a consequential amendment. And in clause 20, this is a technical correction whereby we are replacing an O with a full stop. And then in clause 21, this is a technical correction. We're making the text gender neutral. In clause 22, there apportioning of the capital gains tax annual exclusion rule when an individual ceases to be tax resident so they don't do double dipping. In clause 23, every year the TTIC issues government grants. So they are included in the levy schedule of the Income Tax Act. So government grants that are included in the levy schedule are exempt from tax. So each and every year we have to update the levy schedule in line with the government grants issued by the TTIC.
Carry on.
And clause 24, there we are aligning the provisions of the Customs and Excise Act. In clause 25, that is the clause that deals with vaping, because vaping is in the TLAB, not in the Rates Bureau. In clause 26, you remember during the year, the minister will make amendments in terms of the Customs and Excise Act. So in order for those amendments to become law, because the minister make amendments by means of notices in the Government Gazette, so we have to have a continuation provision. So clause 26 makes provision for all the amendments that are made by the minister by notice to be law. Clause 27, we are on now, dealing with the Section 72 ruling on cross-border leasing of aircraft and ship. Clause 28, these are the consequential amendments to last year amendments regarding the tax treatment, VAT treatment of temporary leasing of residential property. And clause 29, there are two amendments that are made there, the VAT leasing of temporary leasing of temporary residence, of temporary leasing, letting of residential property. And the second one is VAT treatment of documentary extension of VAT treatment of documentary evidence of for repossessions. What happens is that when the goods are repossessed, it is difficult for the owner, like if my car is being repossessed, what happens is that the car dealer may not have all the information. So there used to be a VAT ruling in this regard. So here we are changing VAT rulings into the law so that whenever those documents are required in cases of repossessions, then we make provisions to say that in such cases, the documentary proof that is required is this documentary proof. Clause 30 is also VAT treatment of temporary letting of residential property. And clause 31, is also dealing with documentary evidence of repossession, similar to what I've just clarified. Clause 32, it's VAT treatment of registration of foreign suppliers, because SARS will usually issue rulings regarding foreign suppliers that are unable to register for VAT in South Africa. So we're turning the rulings into the law because we're doing away with Section 72 rulings. Clause 33, VAT treatment of pooling arrangements. This applies in scenarios whereby the doctors will enter into pooling arrangements, for example, in Netcare hospitals. So there we are dealing with the VAT treatment, mostly of pooling arrangement, more especially if those pooling arrangements are required based on the rules like Health Professional Council, as an example.
Jay, sorry, if I may just interject.
Yes.
Thanks very much. It's just a question on what, that previous issue about foreign companies providing services and not being able to register for VAT. Now, I recently purchased some software online and there was a purchase amount. And once I clicked on the transaction, I actually raised a tax amount. Which I then queried with them, and because they couldn't explain, I reversed the transaction. Because frankly, if they're collecting tax, they should be paying tax in South Africa. I shouldn't be paying a value-added tax on an item that I'm buying when the company's domiciled somewhere else. How does one control that? Is there a reporting line where someone can go, where you can report people that are inflating prices or purporting to collect taxes that are not paid in South Africa. And I realize where a software company has got an office somewhere here in South Africa, they will be registered. But when I did a search, and yeah, you know, you think I've got all the time in the world to do these things, but when things irritate me, I tend to get quite bloody minded. But I did a search and I couldn't find that they had any local representation. So quick question on that, just and perhaps not affecting the clause by clause, but informing us how the nitty-gritty works. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. I think Anissa will come in. Her hand is up. She's our specialist on VAT. But I just want to know, South Africa was the first mover regarding VAT on e-services regulations as one of the BEPS action items. So remember, on BEPS, currently we are unable to tax, to impose income tax on digital services. However, with regard to VAT, there is already a solution, and South Africa has got regulations in that regard. So, Anissa, you can continue.
Thanks, Yanga. Thank you, Chair. Thank you, members. In 2019, we introduced the amended legislation. We had initial legislation 2014. As Yanga said, we were one of the first countries in the world to action the BEPS matters, the base erosion, profit shifting on the digital economy. And Norway was the first, we were the second. We introduced basic regulations that then required non-resident suppliers, even if they didn't have physical presence in the country, to register for VAT in South Africa, provided that two out of three requirements were met. First, the supplier was being made from an offshore supplier to a local resident. Second, that the payment was coming out of a bank account in South Africa. And third, that the recipient had a business or physical address in South Africa. Provided two out of those three requirements were met, and provided that the supplier exceeded the VAT threshold, which at that time was just 50,000, they were required to register for VAT in South Africa and levy that VAT on suppliers. So in 2014, we introduced that. In 2019, we amended to expand it to all services and to increase the threshold to 1 million. So you'll find that whether it's your, you know, you're downloading tunes, or whether you're downloading software, whether you're downloading screensavers and paying for it, that will be levied because these suppliers are registered for VAT in South Africa. The VAT is then handed over to SARS by way of the VAT returns. So in all probabilities, this, you know, if you go onto the VAT vendor search in of SARS and you type in the vendor's accurate name, registered name, or a VAT number, if it's provided on the invoice, you will get confirmation of the registration there. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Okay, Dennis, do you want to come back?
I'm happy with that answer. Thanks, Chair.
Okay, can we continue, please?
Okay, thank you. Clause 34 deals with the extension of the sunset date for the R&D tax incentive from 1 October 2022 to 1 January 2024. Clause 35, 36, and 37 deal with the postponement of the effective date of all those provisions, due to the fact that the unlisted routes legislation is still not yet in force. Clause 38 is the carbon tax rate trajectory from 2023 to 2030. That's all in clause 38. Clause 39, carbon tax issue price neutrality deductions for electricity generation from fossil fuels.
Fine, carry on, please.
Clause 40 deals with tax neutral transfer from Provident Fund. It's a consequential amendment to last year's amendment. Clause 41, consequential to last year's amendment, clarifying the definition of contributed tax capital. Clause 42 consequential to last year's amendment regarding assessed losses, but here for mining companies. And clause 43 is the short title. That's all, Chair. Thank you.
Thanks, Yanga. So is there anybody else who wants to raise any broader issue on this bill? No. Okay. Can we then move on to the TALAB, which is usually easy to process because basically, as you know, colleagues, once you dealt with the policy issues, the administration bill is much easier to manage. And it's on your screen. Thanks, Alan. Okay.
France, right. Chair.
Sorry, France is going to handle this here from SARS. France, welcome.
Good morning, Chair. Good morning, honourable members and honourable Chair. Thank you for that. So the first one is just an update for the New Companies Act. Clause 2, then, is a textual correction. We add a comma. Clause 3 is...
I'd like to object to the addition of that comma, Chair.
Ha, ha, ha. Okay. Next, please.
Clause 3, we're dealing with a name change in a neighbouring state. Improving the consistency of the dividend tax system. Clause 5 is a correction. We're inserting an of. Clause 6, we're correcting a cross-reference. Clause 7, is an amendment to ensure that the commissioner is able to prescribe a time within which a declaration needs to be made with respect to types of cargo, which was missing up until now. Clause 10 is again an invoice consequential amendment because we no longer need to say as prescribed because the term is defined. There's a technical correction here, and we're again dealing with the invoice question. As prescribed, correct and sufficient can be deleted because we've defined it. Clause 12. Clause 12 is where we get into the meat of the invoice. Again, a clause to work with the advance rulings introduction. Clause 14, again, advance rulings. Clause 15, again, advance rulings. Clause 16 is then where the meat of the advance ruling system comes in, and it deals with the process of applying, considering, and issuing the rulings, and if necessary, withdrawing them. So this is quite a long clause, I'm jumping ahead. Clause 16 refers to an obsolete provision relating to Mozambique, which has long been in disuse, so it's simply being deleted. Clause 17 is the provision dealing with the introduction of advanced rulings. And as I say, application, consideration, issue, and if necessary, withdrawal, all dealt with here. And so you'll see it's quite a long provision which covers all of those aspects. Brings us to clause 18. Again, this now ties in with the advanced ruling system. Clause 19 is an invoice clause to tie up with that set of amendments. Clause 20, again, invoice amendments. Clause 21, yet another set of invoice amendments. As you'll see, the concept of an invoice is pretty fundamental to the Customs and Excise Act. Clause 22. Another provision dealing with invoices to assist in prescribing what is required. Clause 23 is, again, the name change in neighboring state. Clause 24, sorry. Yeah, clause 24. So we've just had a discussion about the electronic service system, which requires offshore vendors to register in South Africa when their turnover exceeds for into South Africa exceeds R1 million. Now, it may be that there is a very short spike, and so having someone register and then having to deregister again directly afterwards would be a burden on both the taxpayer and on SARS. So there is the ability to not require that if there is an abnormal circumstance of a temporary nature. Then that wouldn't be required. That is something that you will also find in the domestic VAT system, so we're being consistent. Clause 25, again, name change. Clause 26, now, we've run into a difficulty with the employment tax incentive that there are some very aggressive schemes there to obtain refunds of pays you earn, or in fact, payments in respect of the ETI when it is not due. And that was exacerbated by the fact that SARS was actually unable to impose a penalty when people engaged in those sorts of practices. So we're bringing the employment tax incentive into the general penalty scheme in the Tax Administration Act. And that's clause 26. Clause 27. What clause 27 seeks to achieve is that if you have a penalty for certain defined issues in terms of the Employment Tax Incentive Act, and you, as a result of the same behavior, also trigger a penalty in terms of the Tax Administration Act, we remove the duplication so that you don't pay a penalty twice on the same behavior. Clause 28, one of the recognized controlling bodies in terms of the Tax Administration Act, the Independent Regulatory Board for Auditors, no longer is in a position to act as a regulatory controlling body because of changes in its own legislation, and has requested that it be removed from the tax legislation, and that's what this amendment does. Clause 29. The issue here is around tax compliance status. We've seen an increase in behavior where, in order to get a positive tax compliance status, people will put in a null return, even though they're economically active, so that they can say all their returns are in and their payments are up to date. Since it was a null return, there are no payments to be made. They can get a positive tax clearance status. And so to deal with that kind of issue where it is clear that we're dealing with a misrepresentation or worse, we're in a This proposes that SARS be permitted to revoke access to tax clearance status. An important point here is this can only be done by a senior SARS official, and it can only be done after the taxpayer has been given 10 business days notice so that they can address SARS's concerns. I mean, it may be that SARS has misidentified the taxpayer, something of that nature, in which case the taxpayer can correct the issue and SARS need not then revoke access. Moving on. Clause 30, this is an amendment to tie in with the penalty provisions around the employment tax incentive to ensure the Scheme of the Administration Act. Clause 31.
I don't know what's going on there. Hello? Yeah, I think that's Mama Rakhane. She's taking a flight, so she won't be with us. Okay, can carry on, please?
So, apologize. That's clause 31. All right, this is a technical correction. There was a conflict in amending provisions, and that is being corrected here. Clause 32. Again, a technical correction to fix a cross-reference. Clause 33. Another technical correction. And then clause 34 is the short title.
Fine. I don't think you usually do much with the Teller bill, but if people want to, you're free to comment, obviously. I'm dealing with matters through the WhatsApp, dealing with this committee meeting and related to when we can vote on this. So my texting is related to the work we're doing here. So unless there's something members want to raise, I think we'll defer voting till tomorrow. I will speak to Comrade Dikeledi. Maybe we can use the half an hour of their time to formally vote on these bills and on the report. So having said that, as I know it, Sequoia is meeting tomorrow morning from 9 o'clock to 1 p.m. and we will engage with them about using half an hour. Otherwise, if I can't get that, then we'll meet tonight and vote on the bills and report, because it's not being postponed to the 13th, and this meeting has been on our program as negotiated between Inkululeko and Lubabalo, because the slot is normally Sikoa slot, and it's been on the program for, I think, 3 or 4 weeks, and Alan sent out a notice yesterday. But we did say in brackets voting if we get to that stage, not knowing whether we will. So I think we can either, I'll speak to Dikeledi immediately after this meeting. Alan, would you help us to send out a notice about when we will vote on the report and the bill? Okay, Alan, are you here?
Yes, Chair, no issue. I'll do that.
We'll have to look to the meeting tonight, or possibly ask Comrade Dikeledi to give us half an hour to process these bills and the report. Is there anything else we want to raise? Nope. Thank you all. So we'll see you tonight.
Chairperson, can I speak on your proposal? I think either tonight or the half an hour, I'm comfortable with that because we have to deal with this. But I was thinking if members are available tonight, we can do it tonight, this evening.
Yeah, what I want to suggest, look, Dikeledi, I'm in your hands because you know far better than I do what we're going to do at tomorrow's meeting. You see, it might not even take half an hour because it's just a formal moving and a seconding of the three bills, right? the report, usually the tax report, it doesn't take so much of processing. It might even be 20 minutes. So I would suggest, because some members have not been able to connect for various reasons, you know, it's 20 minutes of tomorrow. So instead of getting Alan to, those of you who came in late, it's because Nkululeko is sick. So Alan Wickham, whom you know, Dikeledi, is actually finance chair, finance committee secretary. So he helped us out today. So, you know, what do you think? What do other members think? Dikeledi is offering us either we can meet tonight, or Fani says he already has another. What's he saying? Chat. I would have another week scheduled for 20:00. Yeah, we can meet after 20:00 if we have to. But Dikeledi, what do you think? You can slot us in for 20 minutes to half an hour maximum tomorrow.
I'm comfortable, Chair.
Oh, thanks. Okay, let's work the matter out. So what we're going to do, Alan, is what do you suggest? Do we use the first 20 minutes or so, or the last 20 minutes or so in your meeting? In our meeting, I mean, we all...
The last 20 minutes? The last 20 minutes?
So the meeting is supposed to finish at 13:00, right? Your meeting tomorrow. Our meeting, SECOA meeting tomorrow. It's finishing at 13:00, is that right?
Yeah.
Is that, okay. So what you can do, Alan, is send out a notice voting on bills and report, as soon as SECOA meeting finishes tomorrow, in brackets, around 12:30. But we're the same people, so it doesn't matter if it's 12:40 or 12:50. But just for a matter of record, you know, in case there's anybody from civil society or anybody who wants to observe the final voting, although I think it's very boring. If Peter is still here, my friend, Peter, thanks for being here. But is he here? Peter? You know, we do nothing. The process is over. It's just a technical thing.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Yeah, but we will send you the report as we will send everybody else. It doesn't seem to me to be reasonable to expect you to join us for 20 minutes tomorrow, but we will send you the report. And we thank you for your participation. I say this also to any other civil society stakeholder that I haven't spotted on our platform. So there it is. Alan, you'll send the notice out.
I'll do that, Chair.
Thank you. Thanks, Dikeledi. So we're done for now. Thanks, everybody. See you tomorrow.
Thank you.